We'll let some people come in and sit down. I invite you to close your eyes if you wish, get comfortable. Take a breath or two. Allowing ourselves to become completely centered here in this space. As we give ourselves the gift of our own attention this morning, we let go of the thoughts from this past week, what happened yesterday, what's going on this afternoon or this week, and we allow ourselves to become completely present here as we begin to recognize the still small voice within us, which is the voice of Spirit, always speaking, always there for us, always ready to answer, as long as we are ready to listen. So right now we are listening. We are open to a greater awareness of how the power of God, the power of Spirit exists in our life. We recognize the spirituality of this world that we live in, the presence of this power everywhere we look, in everything, realizing that it is in every person, every place, and that it is always in us, supporting us, creating through us, creating the circumstances of our life. So we honor this presence everywhere, every when, in every person, place, and thing. We honor the oneness of all people, the oneness of the universe. We state our intent to practice the greatest gifts that we have to offer, the gifts of kindness and compassion, recognizing the presence of Spirit in all people, whether they act like it or not, and remembering it in ourselves. This is our truth. As we know this, we create a greater life for ourselves, a greater world for all of us, and we honor this and give thanks for the power that is within us. We give thanks for the people in our life, thanks for the opportunities that we have, thanks for all the gifts we have been given and all the gifts we have yet to give. This is our truth. This is the spiritual truth of our existence. We accept it, we honor it, we embrace it, and we release it into consciousness, knowing that it is so for us now and always. And so it is. Well, today we continue with part two of our four-part series we do every January on the basic principles of this teaching, the teaching of the science of mind. This is an approach to living that has been described as a combination of the laws of science, the opinions of philosophy, and the revelations of religion, which is a nice way to put it. But personally, I like it because I call it practical, intelligent, contemporary spirituality. This teaching recognizes the spiritual life force within each one of us, that inner desire that we all have to experience life in the best possible way. It takes that awareness of that inner energy and it blends it with all of the different aspects of the physical world that we see all around us. This amazing, complicated, fascinating world of people and places and things and experiences where every day we live and work and play and we laugh and we cry and we love and we fight and we shop and we do all those important things and do anything else that we decide to do. And it speaks to us in a way that makes sense. That's becoming a lot more important to a lot of people now in terms of religion. In fact, that idea has probably been the greatest change in religion over the past couple of centuries, because even though we in this teaching are a part of what many people call the New Thought movement, there's really nothing new about it. Because intelligent, spiritually grounded people, which all of the great spiritual teachers were, from Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, all of them, these teachers have been teaching us this and thinking this way for a long time. That's why instead of seeing ourselves as cogs in this giant mechanical universe being controlled by the man upstairs, Instead of believing that somebody is judging us and keeping score all the time until the day we die, at which point we either go up or go down, instead of thinking of this, many of us have begun to notice something very interesting, spiritually speaking. We have begun to recognize and to honor our own divinity. Our own divinity, that spark of sacred fire that burns inside each and every one of us. In other words, our knowledge about the universe has evolved to the point where we realize that God does not live in some far-off place called heaven. It lives in us. It lives in us. So any religious teaching that tries to maintain its credibility and its authority using old, limited, superstitious, and unscientific beliefs runs the risk of being left behind by those people who realize that true spirituality was never meant to hold us back, it was always meant to draw us forward. Now, last week I talked about the most basic idea of all, the idea that what we need is not just a better attitude about religion, what the world really needs is a better idea of God. Everything that happens in our life is a reflection of our belief of what this creative power is. It's a reflection of our belief of what our higher power can and can't do, or what it will or won't do for us. So we believe in this teaching that this thing that we call God, what Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of this teaching, calls the thing itself, that this power is a limitless and intelligent energy that shows up in the world as the creative intelligence in all of us. Now, this power is loving, by which we mean it is supportive, and it constantly provides only the best for this world that it has created out of itself. In fact, all this power does is create. It creates over and over and over again. And the way it creates in your life is through you, and the way at which it creates in my life is through me. All of our beliefs, all of our thoughts, which is the way that this power comes through us, all of the situations and experiences that show up for us every day are simply God being expressed in the world in the way that we have chosen to express it. Now, today we're going to expand upon that idea because it's absolutely essential for us to understand our true relationship with this power if we have any intention at all of living our life in a better and better way, which is why we're here. So the title of the talk today is Seeing the God in Us. And it's based on the second part of the introduction of the book The Science of Mind by Dr. Holmes. And the second part is called The Way It Works. And when he says it, he's talking about God. So it's the way God works in the world. So first, let's lay a little bit of groundwork that'll help us both today and next week. Now, as we all know, this physical world that fascinates us so much is not really a physical, solid, material world. It's made up of energy. Now, in the spiritual realm, we've heard this for centuries, mostly from the Eastern religions like Buddhism. But all of the discoveries that we have made in this past century in our knowledge of quantum physics and what we've learned about the subatomic universe and all of the other building blocks of nature have shown that this is true not just spiritually, but also scientifically. We've discovered that every bit of what we call matter gets its unique characteristics from vibration and movement, from the way its energy is structured. As a result, everywhere we look in nature, from the farthest reaches of outer space to the tiniest particles we can see, and even smaller than that, even into the workings of our own mind and our own body, everywhere we look, we see the evidence of an invisible intelligence at work. We can't see it, but we can see what it does. We can see the effects. So there's something invisible but very real behind the physical appearance that we see that makes things work, whether we call that something God or spirit or energy or whatever we want to call it. So this thing that we call the world and all of the people and the material and the relationships that make it up is not so much a physical entity that we have to react to. It is a single, unified consciousness expressing itself as the world. Not in the world or through the world, but as the world itself. Now, one obvious question is, and this is a question that most religions are based on, is where does this consciousness come from? And the answer has to be, it doesn't come from anywhere. Because if it is the world itself, if it's everywhere present, there is nowhere else for it to come from. It is everything, including us. And in your life, it shows up physically as you, as your body, as your experience. In my life, it shows up as me. And together, all of us, not just in this auditorium or this city, but everywhere, it shows up as the physical world we see, as society, as all of these different things, as the invisible made visible. So that means that the world, our individual world, or the world that we all create together, can never be any better. It can never be any better than the combined consciousness, the combined thoughts and beliefs that we all express and act upon on a daily basis. Now, that also means for every person who learns to think more spiritually, more intelligently, or more creatively, for every person who learns to be more loving and less judgmental and more open to a better way of doing things, for every one person who learns that and becomes aware of it, the world becomes that much better. So as we all learn to use this power to improve ourselves and to improve our own little corner of the universe, our own job and family and friends and all those things, as we start to recognize our true responsibility and our relationship with life and our intimate spiritual connection with every other person on the planet, all of life gets that much better for every one of us. I believe that is what we are here in this life to learn. Unfortunately, it seems that we are very slow learners, you know? For some reason, we have had a lot of trouble recognizing how powerful and creative and amazing we can be. We refuse to acknowledge how many wonderful things we have accomplished. We focus more on our problems than our possibilities, more on our failures than our successes, and in the process, we end up ignoring what we might call our spiritual magnificence. For some reason, we seem to have forgotten the spiritual potential that we were all born with. We're like the man who went to a psychiatrist for a year, and after a year, the psychiatrist says, well, the good news is you don't have an inferiority complex. The bad news is you really are inferior, you know? That's how we feel sometimes. And until we get past that way of thinking about ourselves and about God, we can't grow. You see, the reason we don't see ourselves as divine beings, as individualizations of this one presence that's everywhere, is not because we are inferior, it's because we have been conditioned to think of ourselves that way. For thousands of years, the vast majority of the human race has seen itself as spiritually flawed. Many of us were told by our ministers, by the good sisters, by our teachers, maybe even by our parents, by those people who should have been supporting and encouraging us, we have been told many things. We have been told that we are sinners. I think they say it that way. That we are. Well, that's how that isn't that the person who does sin? It's a two-syllable word. We have been told that we are weak, that we are selfish, that we are arrogant, we are greedy, all these things. We have been taught to see God as a judge, as this father figure up there who simply puts us up with us because it needs somebody that it can order around. That's what we were told. Our job is to do what we're told, to hope we do it right, and to accept meekly and quietly whatever life gives to us. And for a long time, we didn't ask life for very much because we were told that we didn't deserve very much, and we believed it. But teachings like this one have challenged that idea. Now, last week we talked about the first part of that equation. We talked about changing the way we think about God, the power that creates and sustains us in the world. But if we really intend to reclaim the power that we have all been given simply by virtue of being here, what we call our spiritual birthright, if we intend to take our rightful place in the creative process of living well, we also need to change the second part, the part that describes who and what we are. Now, metaphysically speaking, meaning beyond the physical, spiritually speaking, if you want to say it that way, what we teach here is a revolutionary idea in the history of modern religion, which is very surprising when you think about it, because you would think that what we teach is obvious. Most of us have known this since we were that tall. But what's even more surprising to me is how so many of the more traditional teachings got so far off track, because most of them, if not all of them, did not start out teaching what they are teaching now. You see, if this power that we call God is a completely loving, supportive power, as we believe, and if it is infinitely intelligent, or intelligence, we believe that too, then why would it possibly create anything less perfect than itself? Why would it do that? I mean, it seems a little bit strange to think that a perfect creative intelligence would make a defective product just so that it could feel better. Just so that it could feel. So doesn't that sound silly, you know? This whole idea that we are separate from or inferior to this power would have to mean that God is either jealous or incompetent, that it was either unable or unwilling to make something as wonderful as itself, which can't possibly be true. That's why Dr. Holmes said in this section of the book, if we are truly made in God's image and likeness, then everything that's true about God must be true about us too. Just on a different scale. Now, if you think about it, that doesn't make God seem any less. In fact, it makes it even greater. For example, if we learn to see the presence of an infinite intelligence in a rose or a blade of grass or even a grain of sand, that doesn't minimize this creative power. To me, it expands it. It exalts God, to use an old religious term, which means it exalts the idea of a creative intelligence. In other words, it shows us what marvelous things, what marvelous detail this creative power can and does do. Now, in the same way, if we learn to see ourselves as a perfect idea in the mind of God expressing in the world, that doesn't limit the idea of God. In fact, it makes it greater. But it also allows us to see ourselves as something greater too. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I believe that most of the world's problems would disappear overnight if we could all see ourselves as something greater than what we appear to be. If we could all see each other as these divine beings and start to behave as if it were true. Of course, there are always people who hear this idea and they say, yeah, right, if we're such perfect replicas of God, then how come the world is so screwed up? If we're so smart, how come we got so many problems? And there's a very simple answer to that question. Just because we make mistakes, either individually or collectively, it doesn't mean that the potential for perfection is not there. It doesn't mean that the potential isn't there. It just means that we have not recognized it yet. It just means that we have not evolved to that point yet. All of life, all of the world changes constantly. We all know this. It changes through the process of evolution. And I'm not talking here about Darwinian evolution. That's one thing. But I'm talking about mental and spiritual evolution. We're talking about intelligent growth and change. Our bodies evolve. We know that. Our thoughts and our beliefs evolve, or at least they should. Our ability to create evolves. Look at technology, medicine, all of these things. And in the process, civilization, society evolves. But to accomplish this, and this is a radical idea, God needs us as much as we need God. To accomplish this evolution, this power needs us as much as we need it. That's how important we are, because things like world peace and prosperity and ending world hunger and curing diseases like AIDS or breast cancer or whatever it is, all of these things can only be brought about through changes in our level of belief and understanding about what it is possible for us to do using what is already in the world and using the intelligence we have been given and the wisdom that evolves from that intelligence to create something better, to heal our mistakes, to heal our bad thinking, if you want to call it that. Or let me say it this way. Spiritually, we are all perfect. But spiritual perfection doesn't mean we don't make mistakes. It just means that we consciously, that's very important, we consciously use our God-given intelligence to learn from our mistakes and not to repeat them. Emerson said it beautifully. He said, "We lie in the lap of immense intelligence and are organs of its activities and receivers of its truth." We lie in the lap of immense intelligence and are organs of its activity and receivers of its truth. That means we are not helpless tools or mindless instruments following God's orders. We are organs of its activity. We carry out the business of creation by using the same mind that created everything. The same mind. In fact, this divine intelligence is not just something that we use, it's not just something that we have, it is what we are. It is what we are. Or to use the words of the master teacher Jesus, we are always going about our Father's work. That's what he meant. Now, as a race, we have used our intelligence and our creativity in a positive way to build things like airplanes and cities and computers and superhighways and all that kind of stuff. On the other side, we have also used our intelligence and creativity in negative ways to create pollution, global warming, disease, racism, and weapons of self-destruction. The important thing to recognize is we have used the same mind to do both. To do both. The good news is at least some of us are beginning to wake up and see what our negative decisions are doing to us. And I mean to all of us, not just the people in our town, our country, all of us on the planet. We are beginning, and just beginning, to realize that the intelligence that created these problems is the same intelligence, in fact, the only intelligence that's going to solve them. But as Einstein once pointed out, we're going to have to use our intelligence at a higher level to fix them than we used when we created them. So God is not going to solve our problems by reaching down this giant finger, straightening thing out, squashing the bad people, raising up the good people, fixing stuff that we've messed up. Healing can only happen through us. We can do it or not. That's what we mean by using our divine intelligence. The answers that we need are not going to show up as handwriting in the sky or in some stone tablets in a cave in the Middle East. The answers we need for any problem we have in the world or in our own individual life, the answer's already here. We just need to look for it in the right way. Now, I do want to point out that even though we believe that this is a logical, intelligent universe that functions through scientific, mental, and spiritual principles, we also believe that there is more to life than that. Life is not just a mechanical process. If it were, it wouldn't be a whole lot of fun. What about the spiritual joy of being alive, the joy of holding the people we love, creating? Where do our heart's desires fit into this? That's a good question. Because our deepest desires are a very important part of this connection between this power that is constantly flowing from us. Now, whatever we think about God, one thing we need to be absolutely sure of is that it must enjoy life very, very much. It has to have a permanent, powerful desire for those things that we call good, things like love and joy and laughter and health and peace and prosperity and success. And the reason I say this is because these are the things that everyone wants without exception. And if these desires are not a part of the God in us, where did they come from? Where did they come from? But let's take that idea one step further. If God is all there is, and if we are the way that it works, then the desires that do not harm others, those desires must not only be okay for us to have, there also must be a way for us to achieve them. Because even though God has a sense of humor, it's not cruel. It's not a cruel power. It would be a very cruel joke to have a creator who filled our hearts and minds with something that wasn't available to us and then punished us when we tried to get it. Once again, an intelligence would not work that way. We need to have more respect for God than that and more respect for ourselves than that. In fact, I think that the reason that so many people are living lives of anger and frustration and sadness, or what Thoreau called lives of quiet desperation, is not because their desires have been denied by the world or by God, They may think that's why, but I don't think it is. I think they know at some level that they themselves have denied and continue to deny their own divine ability to achieve the life that they could be living. That's what I think. Either they don't believe they deserve that kind of a life, or they don't believe that they have the ability to achieve it. Now, these kind of people, as sad as it is, these are people who do not understand that they are the way this power works. These are people who did not read what Paul said, not me, the old bald guy, the other one, anyway, where he said, if God is for us, who can be against us? If God is for us, who can be against us? This is the message that teachings like this one are bringing to the world, and it's about time. It's about time. Now, sometimes we all get confused about our desires, and this usually happens when we start to look outside of ourselves to see what we're supposed to want instead of looking inside ourselves to know what fills our heart. That's what happens when we fail to trust our inner wisdom. Let's use money as an example. A few years ago, the big internet bubble, there were people who read about the stock market and all these internet billionaires, and they figured out that they desired a lot of money, which is fine. I like money. There's nothing wrong with the desire for money. The problem was some people thought what they wanted was a lot of money when what they really wanted was love, freedom, security, or respect. Now, they could visualize themselves living in this fantastic stratosphere, economically speaking, because they saw other people doing it, but they could not see themselves as free or safe or loved or respected by other people or by themselves. So even if they made a lot of money, it didn't solve their problems because it could never fill the emptiness that they felt inside. What they really desired was something quite different from what they were trying to get. It's the same way when we go looking for love. We spend years trying to find someone who likes us better than we like ourselves. Have you noticed that? We look for someone who has faith in our abilities, someone who thinks we look good, someone who thinks we have a lot of potential, and right after we find them and get them to like us, we dump them. Why? Because of their bad judgment. That's what we do. We do. We try to find friends who make us feel better about ourselves than we can make ourselves feel, and then we drop them if they don't drop us first because our life doesn't get any better when we're around them. The fact that only we can change our life doesn't seem to occur to us. We keep looking out there for something to fix what's in here when we don't realize that what's in here isn't broken. It's just a little confused. It's just a little confused. It's time we learned and accepted that we are individual expressions of God. No one else knows what's in our mind or our heart. No one else knows what we can do, and even if they did, it wouldn't matter because they couldn't do it for us. Unfortunately, they don't have to. There is a power for life, a power of life, a vibrant, energizing, limitless, infinite power of life that's always giving to us whatever we need to achieve the greatest good we could ever imagine. So whenever we feel frightened or confused or desperate or whatever it is, it's simply because we have forgotten who and what we are. Or as Dr. Holmes said, anytime we think we have a problem, it is simply because we are acting unintelligently in the presence of a perfect intelligence. In the presence of a perfect intelligence. We are all more important to the world than we realize. We are, each and every one of us, powerful, special, unique beings. There's never been anyone exactly like you, and thank God there'll never be anyone exactly like me, all right? That means each one of us must have something special to offer the world. Otherwise, why would we be here? Why would we be here? And when we begin to accept that we are a direct reflection of God, all of the power of God will begin to show up in our life as a direct reflection of us, of our thoughts, of our beliefs, of our desires and our expectations. And by accepting this power consciously and deliberately, that's important, in every part of our life, we are demonstrating to the world and to ourselves that we are the way it works. Now, next week, we're going to talk about what this power does. We're going to talk about the spiritual laws that exist, the law of attraction, the law of cause and effect, many of those laws that allow us to turn this invisible power into things, to turn thoughts into things. So I invite you to be here. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Let's take a few moments. This time is important because this is when we take the ideas that resonate with us and take them as our own. I give them to you freely. And we set aside the others for later, recognizing that we are not only supported by the intelligence of the universe, we are the intelligence of the universe supporting itself as us. Everything in our life we create. The relationships, not just between us and the people in our life, but the relationship with our work, the relationship with our money, the relationship with our physical body, the relationship with our experiences, everything from the highway to the malls to our home to school to work, wherever it is, we are constantly creating our awareness. We are choosing what we believe about that situation or that person. We are accepting what we believe or what we have been told, and we are creating that relationship. We can change it whenever we want by changing our mind, by changing the way in which we are using the intelligence that flows through us. So as we recognize this, we begin to go through the world not as a victim, not automatically. We go through the world as a perfect creative intelligence would go through the world, seeing everything as spiritual, invisible energy ready to be shaped and reformed into a greater idea, seeing every situation as the potential for something much more wonderful, seeing every person as far more beautiful and talented and compassionate than they may appear to be. This is what we are able to do. We do not need to react to negativity. We do not need to react with fear. We never need to react with anger. We simply allow ourselves to be present, look at our life, and say, what would I create that would be better? I invite you now to take a few moments in the silence of your own heart and mind, and in this silence, simply see yourself as this beautiful, powerful, creative being, a spiritual being here in your mind's eye, constantly creating the life you desire. Take these few moments in silence. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we accept this truth as our own. We know that this is the way we exist in the world, from the inside out, not from the outside in. And with a deep appreciation for the spiritual presence within us that supports us, we accept this truth as our own and release it into the law, knowing that it is so for us now and always. And so it is.